And good evening. You are listening to In Tune to Nature on WIFG Atlanta. And this is your station for progressive information. And remember, as you listen to our program, that the views and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of WIFG, its board, staff, or volunteers. And I'm Sonia Schwartz, and will be your host this evening. Tonight, we have a guest joining us on the phone from Hawaii. He is the author, Robert Wintner, also known as Snorkel Bob, the founder of Snorkel Bobs in Hawaii. He is on the front lines of the campaign to ban the aquarium trade around the world and has served on the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society Board of Directors. He is an environmentalist and animal rights activist, primarily against the devastation aquarium trade. And his latest book is entitled Reef Libre, The Last Best Reefs in the World. Good evening, Bob. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Aloha, Sonia, and thanks for having me. It's good to be with you.
And I'm just looking at your gorgeous book of photographs and your book entitled Reef Libre, Libre, which means free. So maybe you can give us an explanation on the title.
Well, it's a play on the cocktail known as Cuba Libre. Many claims to the origins of that cocktail. I think Seagram's, or it's Bacardi rum, that's it, lays the claim that when Teddy Roosevelt was leading the Rough Riders up San Juan Hill in the Spanish-American War, of course, that occurred in Cuba, somebody said, I would like a Coke or a rum or something, and they mixed the two together, and somebody said, Cuba Libre, and so it meant, you know, the revolutionaries lay claim to Cuba Libre, and so do those who are opposed to the revolution. And it went all around the block. I took the name and called it Reef Libre to indicate that the reefs in Cuba may be more free than any reefs in the world. They're certainly in better shape than any reefs in the world.
Yes, that's what's fascinating because, unfortunately, we don't know much about, you know, Cuba. And the only reef system with 100 biodiversity and a complete host of predators, that's absolutely amazing. Can you talk about it?
Well, sure. There are three fundamental criteria that we use in assessing reef quality or, say, reef health. And two of them you named. One is biodiversity. Most people, and I'll talk about that for a second, biodiversity means the number of species present. And any ecosystem is designed by nature to host a given number of species. We know that species disappear. They go extinct. Sometimes by natural causes and sometimes by man-made causes. In the case of reefs, most extinction or disappearance is caused by human activity. And, you know, most people think of the Coral Triangle, which is in south of Asia, north of Australia, and includes Indonesia around in there, as the most biodiverse area in the world. But it really only supports a smaller percentage of the number of species that were once there because of overfishing. And people go to it, and they're amazed and impressed, but you really don't know what should be there if you can't see it. In Cuba, scientists now theorize that all the species that we thought should be there are there, and in fact a few extras that they thought were already extinct have reappeared. The second standard is coral cover. Most parts of the world have a unique look to them, and the same holds true for Caribbean reefs. They're characterized by fan corals, sea fans, whip corals, very colorful. It's a shallow sea, so ambient light is pretty abundant, and coral cover is 100%. You don't see sandy rubble or brownouts, which are usually caused from human effluent or other runoff. The coral is vibrant and healthy. And the third category, possibly the most critical in reef vitality these days, is apex predators. When you talk about apex predators, that's the top of the food chain. Most people can relate to land-based systems, and, of course, the king of the beasts is the lion. And there are other animals that are not necessarily at the top of the food chain, but they have no predators. For example, elephants, I guess sometimes baby elephants are susceptible to predators, but they're pretty big and powerful in their own right. On the reef, your apex predators include about four common species. Well, the big moray eels, or anybody who's seen one knows, they're big and hunky, and they have quite a few teeth, and their teeth are pointed inward, and they're long, and these are beautiful, formidable-looking creatures. You have barracuda, same set of choppers on a barracuda, very similar. Big groupers, and I'll come back to groupers, and then, of course, you have the sharks. Well, I'll talk about the groupers first. Groupers are a very common food fish around the world, and on many reefs, if not most reefs, giant groupers have been fished out. They're gone.
They're extinct, practically?
Well, you know, extinction is very tough to calculate underwater. For example, before something can go on the endangered species list, there needs to be a survey or a census of animals in that species. It's very expensive and time-consuming on land. Underwater, it's so expensive, it can often be prohibitive. In Hawaii, we had giant groupers, also known, say, as Goliath groupers, common in the Hawaiian Islands. And now, I don't know if anybody's ever seen one in the last, 20, 25 years. And that's the case on most reefs. And it was the case on Cuba reefs as well, along with sharks. We've had so much negative, sharks have had so much negative press over the years. Of course, the obvious example is Jaws, hateful, narrow-minded book. And then you get phrases like shark-infested waters. Well, there's no infestation about it.
No, humans are infesting the water,
sharks. Yeah, I can talk about urban cores that are more infested than any kind of open water. I call it shark-healthy water. And here's the short history and the facts. Any given reef system should and can support, if it's healthy, 15 to 20 sharks at all times. And the jewel in the crown in Cuba, what got everybody's attention around the world, is a place that's 70 miles south of the Cuban coast in the Gulf of Ana Maria. It's a mangrove estuary rising up out of open water. It's about 1,000 square miles in size, and it's a shallow mangrove estuary. And it was a fished-out, left-for-dead boneyard. People would make the trip from the Cuban coast because it was so abundant with fish, with meat for the table, that they fished it out. The same has happened all over the world. One day, and this is, you know, regardless of your political inclination or your political analysis, one day Fidel Castro, in his power to do so, said, no mas, no more killing sharks. And I don't know what he knew or what he anticipated. I don't know exactly when he did this. I think it was about 18 or 20 years ago, maybe 25. But the sharks came back. When I was there, I interviewed a fellow at Cayo Largo who was reef manager there. He had been at Jardines as a dive leader for 6 years. And I said, why were your sharks in peril? You're nowhere near Asia, where, of course, they kill all the sharks for shark fin soup. He said, we ate our sharks. They were our staple protein for decades. Overnight, with an authoritarian dictatorship, they stopped killing sharks.
That worked beautifully. I mean, do you think it's because Fidel Castro was what you call a water guy and he realized that, you know, apex predators should be protected?
Well, we know he was a fisherman and he was a diver. I don't think he does either one anymore because he's almost 90. But we can only speculate what he knew. It was a very bold, positive move. Scientists predicted that by bringing back apex predators, there would be, they use a very fancy phrase for this, they call it trophic cascading. You put in more big eaters, and they're going to eat more. Makes sense, correct?
Yes.
But it was incorrect. Across the board, it was incorrect. And if you think about a food chain, or if you can just set aside the image of a chain, think of it as different levels. If you have the top level and it's gone, the next two levels will double in population. With more individuals at the second or third level, then the fourth and fifth level will decimate by half because all those guys need to be fed. Then the two levels below that, double in size. So the bottom line is your biodiversity shrinks by 50% in the short term. Conversely, once the sharks, the big eels, the big groupers, the barracuda are allowed to return, everything is once again kept in check and in balance. And, you know, I have to tell you, Sonia, when we pulled up, we were there to document the conditions of the reef. We did not have a specific objective in mind as far as a take-home, clear, focused lesson. But it came. It took about 2 or 3 days to come into focus. We pulled up to our first mooring, and the dive leader said, okay, this is a very special place, and not too many sharks. And we saw a dorsal fin break the water. Now, you know, we were a macho crowd. We dove with sharks before, no big deal. And then we saw three more, and then six more, and they came to the surface, and these sharks were huge. They were 10 to 12 feet long, which is big, not enormous, but they were 4 to 5 feet wide. They were so muscular and so healthy. We were all wondering why we would leave a perfectly good boat in those conditions. And Manuel said, it's okay, go down, do not hesitate, go to the bottom. And we did. By day two or three, we were casual, and it began to sink in. The sharks were curious, they were social, and it was just a wonderful experience to see a healthy reef at work. All the species were there. As I say, the coral cover was 100%, and the Cubans who lead the dive operation at Jardines are so conscientious about what is going on there, what has been restored and recovered, that it's just really a miracle to behold. I have to be careful. I'm in tourism. Tourism's been good to me, but often cautious when I recommend a destination, because if you have a place that's mystical, magical, and there's an onslaught of visitors, the mystical magic goes away. You know this.
Yes, and you must be a bit apprehensive now that Cuba and the U.S. have resumed diplomatic relations. I mean, there will be an invasion of tourists coming from the U.S. and going to the reefs in Cuba. So that could be, you know, a cause for destruction if they are not really well protected.
And that's really the big question that the book asks. I feel confident recommending Jardines de la Reina because it's so expensive and so hard to get there. It was a 6 or 7 hour bus ride from Havana, departing, by the way, at 4 a.m. to Jucaro. At Jucaro, you get on a motor yacht. It's a long story. It's recalled in the book. It was Robert Vesco's old boat from 1981. He was a pioneer of the American Ponzi scheme. Long story, he ended up with his old friend Fidel, and Fidel has the boat now. But then it's a 6 or 7 hour cruise across open ocean, and it can get quite bumpy. And for those reasons alone, I think that only dedicated reef people will visit Jardines. Some of the other, and the Cubans have learned the value of tourism. As I say, you know, when the Soviet Union collapsed, Cuba lost its base of support. Tourism was really, it was not accepted, and then it was, well, a little bit okay, but frowned upon. Then it was tolerated, and they had the special period in peacetime, which is Orwellian language for we're destitute, we're starving to death, we don't know what to do. And they discovered that tourists were far more valuable than anyone had anticipated. Now tourism is embraced. You know, we visited Havana Reefs as a baseline. I was quite impressed with how well they're doing. You have to assume their infrastructure does not exist. Nothing is happening in Cuba. They have no money at all. So you have to assume that all the human effluent in Havana is direct drive straight out to sea. But they also have population control, and there are huge swatches of waterfront, what would be commercial real estate anyplace else. It's a ghost town. It's isolated. It's empty. And the reefs out front are beautiful. Now, we went to another place called Cayo Largo, where they have a 600-room hotel, and they cater to mostly Canadians and some Europeans, and the whole format is all you can eat, which is a travesty in a place that has to eat. You know, there's not only no killing sharks, there's no commercial fishing. And the Cubans are so poor, and I might add also so artistic, so smart, and so intelligent and outspoken that they make a joke about eating fried butter, and then they fry up some more butter. What is fried butter? You take a gob of butter, and you roll it in flour, and you fry it and call it food. And there's right now, in my opinion, a backlash towards tourism because the tourists eat fish and the Cubans eat fried butter. And that needs to go away. Back at Cayo Largo, at the 600-room all-you-can-eat hotel, they're attracting a very low demographic of tourists, people who want to belly up to the buffet and have all-you-can-eat. We did it, too. It was great fun. But the spirit of the place could improve. The reefs are dead because those 600 rooms change. They change visitors every day or two or three, and they have to launder the sheets and towels. And again, the gray water from the laundry is direct drive onto the reefs at Cayo Largo. The reefs inside the cut, the break, you know, the shallow part, are dead. There's no snorkeling there. Outside, it's a direct current. And in that direct current, you have invasive algae, a direct result of phosphate-based detergent. It's dead.
Yeah, that's what we have in the States, too. And also the main reef killer is probably the toxic runoff. I mean, do they have any... Of course, they don't have any agribusiness, so they are safe that way.
Oh, yeah. Agribusiness is another one. When the embargo started, they could no longer get pesticides or fertilizers. And what did Fidel say? Fine. We're going to have all organic.
That's perfect.
Which, of course, was a bit of sour grapes, but it's true. You have to be careful for other reasons in Cuba. Everything there is primitive. But there's two economies. One is the local economy, and the other is the tourist-based economy. I think the point is that they have recognized the immense value of tourism, and at Cayo Largo, the fellow who I interviewed, Fausto De Nebbi, said he was there because they're aware of the phosphate detergent problem on the shallow reefs, and they have seen what a dynamic tourism, reef tourism destination Cuba can be, and so his assignment was to bring those reefs back. We can only speculate what's going to happen. You know, will they strangle the golden goose to get it to all the gold inside, or will they just take care of it and let it lay an egg every day? We don't know, and that's the big question. I just think we should support them in every way we can. They've stumbled on it. I'm not saying they did this by method. I give Fidel credit for saying, you know, beginning this thing with no mas on the sharks. I regret they have to eat fried butter. I just think the result is wonderful. And the book, you know, we went down to document because no one knows what's going to happen after the Castro. Will they maintain the same standards on these reefs?
Yeah.
Actually, we think they will. But I posed a challenge to my new friend, Fausto. I said, you know, if this was Hawaii, and I lived for decades in Hawaii, and I was a developer, I would come to you and I would say, look, I'm going to build 1,800 condominiums here, and it's going to be jobs for everybody, prosperity across the board, and not only will we not harm these reefs are going to be even better when we're done. And he thought about that for about 4 seconds. And he looked up, and he was upset, and he said, that won't happen here. And I said, and just you tell me why not.
Yeah, that's a bit risky.
So we'll fight. We know how to fight. And we had a fist bump, and I said, I'm right there with you, buddy. I could have said comrade, but I didn't.
Well, if you are just tuning in, you are listening to In Tune to Nature on WFG Atlanta, and we have the pleasure of talking with Robert Whitner, also known as Snorkel Bob, about his latest book, Reef Libre, Cuba, the Last Best Reef in the World. And unfortunately, human animals have a destructive behavior, and it's always very tempting, you know, through greed, I guess, to try to make money by destroying the biodiversity. Do you think that Cuba cannot go the way that Hawaii went with all the tourism and it's totally spoiled now?
I think it's certainly a possibility. I hope it doesn't happen. I know that there are hotel or resort developers, European outfits, that have been talking to the Cuban government for a long time. And, you know, it's been illegal up till now for Americans to visit Cuba. Of course, you can. We did. But you have to go. We went through Dallas-Fort Worth. You can't go from Dallas-Fort Worth to Havana. You have to. We went to Cancun. You have to come. You can also come in from Canada. You can never go direct from the U.S. to Havana. But the only Americans who went were those who were, you know, a little bit adventurous and willing to take that plunge. Now there's huge interest in Cuba. So, yeah, there's going to be big demand. And I have to say, Habana Vieja is one of the best destinations ever. You just, most people in the U.S. have no idea how beautiful it is. It's just jaw-dropping, and most of it is in ruins from the inside out. They have begun to restore it, but there's so little money available, it goes very slow, and you just hope they can get to it while it's still possible. And if American tourism does increase, that's where the money should go, not to more international adventures. But again, it's all conjectural. I posed it over and over to my friend Fausto. I said, you know, you say there's 1,000 visitors a year to Jardines de la Reina. And that's not very many. That's 100 a month. And any system can support that. I said, what's wrong with 3,000? He said, we don't want it. We want to keep it as it is. I said, what makes you think that those values and those standards can survive, can endure in a system that's so starved for money? He said, because we don't have the same values as you. We're getting along quite well.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. It's just hard to say. I just say, you know, taxi drivers in Cuba, it's a big joke. A taxi driver makes more money than a heart surgeon because he's exposed to tourists. The joke really overlooks the good part of Cuban socialism, and there are good parts. I'm sorry if you think otherwise. But, you know, can those values withstand the rigors of human motivation for self-improvement? You know, it's easy to be skeptical. We sent a copy of Reef Libre to Barack and Michelle Obama, and we know it'll get there because our friend, U.S. Senator Mazie Hirono, will deliver it for us. And we said, can you do anything to make this a World Heritage Site? That would protect it.
Yes,
I think Cubans would go with it. It could be a good move.
That would be great, yeah. Maybe we should write letters to him, or maybe we can have a petition online.
Yeah. I'm not. I don't have much faith in petitions.
No.
I'm more action-oriented.
That's right. And yeah. I wanted also, you know, we have a few minutes left, and I wanted to talk about the aquarium trade. That's also is a cause for destruction. So, I mean, aquarium trade is really a curse. It destroys, you know, species and habitats. And this is why, you know, we boycott. I mean, this program just, you know, encourage people to boycott anything, you know, related to the aquarium trade. So do you think that will not be tempting for people to, you know, start trade with Cuba when, you know, it's more a more open society?
Anything is going to be tempting for a people that's that hungry. You know what they say about your personal values and standards is they go away first when hunger sets in. And that's the hard scientific fact of the situation. And I think it ranges from one individual to the next. I know of people here in Hawaii who are in the aquarium trade, and they don't have nearly the sense of right and wrong as they should. The aquarium trade is a last vestige of trafficking in wildlife for the pet trade. It's never worked out well for the source or the destination. You look at, you know, Burmese pythons now devouring South Florida. You look at big birds from South America. Now we have the Wild Bird Conservation Act. You can't do that anymore. It's illegal. You look at primates from Indonesia. You look at alligators in the sewer system of New York. And the worst catastrophe of our time is lionfish in the Atlantic and Caribbean. And those lionfish did not swim there. The aquarium trade brought them there. There are now more lionfish there than all other species combined. And you see these lionfish rodeos at the big sunburn, you know, drink a lot of beer fest, and scapegoat the lionfish, call the lionfish evil. Lionfish are beautiful creatures where they belong, where they have natural predators. Predators in the Atlantic and the Caribbean don't know to eat them. That's what the aquarium trade has given us, and they just deny all responsibility. They will say anything and do anything because it's a $4 to $5 billion industry. We're very excited because we have 6 bills as of last week in the Hawaii State Legislature to ban the aquarium trade.
Oh, that's great.
It's great, yeah. but politics is tricky business, and it comes down to money and political will. And the difference is, you know, right from wrong. And, you know, any issue you can think of is only another playing chip in the big scheme of issues.
Yes. And so what do you suggest we do as, you know, concerned citizens to stop, you know, the trade?
I would say for the next couple months, if this does grab anybody's interest, they can go to either snorkelbob.com or reefrescuealliance.org, track the bills. You can send in testimony online through easy-to-follow links, and just say, you know, let it be known if you come to Hawaii and what the Hawaii reefs mean to you and how you feel about this. And let them know who you are and what you stand for and if you have any experience on any reef. And just give it your natural 2 cents, and that'll help.
Okay, that's great. So can you mention the website again for our listeners?
Sure. Well, we will have a link at snorkelbob.com. And then also, our main tracking website is, it's all one word, reef, R-E-E-F, rescue, R-E-S-C-U-E, alliance, A-L-L-I-A-N-C-E, .org. And the 2 bills to follow in the Hawaii State House and Hawaii State Senate are ban bills to end the trade in Hawaii now. And that's what people should really follow. There are some other bills that are also great dealing with transport requirements. They now ship the fish in just minimum water, and it's hateful. And one of them calls for a 1 gallon minimum on each critter shipped. And then you can see what the other bills are when you get there.
Okay, great. And, of course, you can always boycott Petco.
Always boycott Petco. They are a nasty. Write it down. I'll sign it. Heinous, lying outfit.
I know.
And I wish they would go out of business where they belong.
We will do our best to put them out of business if we don't buy, you know, their products. That will be a start. And it's a fascinating and enlightening book. And thank you for talking to us, Bob. Once more, the book is called Reef Libre by Robert Wintner. And it's Cuba, the last best reefs in the world. So thank you so much for, you know,
thank
spending
you,
some time with us. And thank you for writing such a, you know, fantastic book. And I wish you good luck. And I hope you will be back on the show.
I will anytime. Thank you, Sona. Thanks for caring.
Thank you, Bob.
Aloha.
Bye. And that will conclude our program tonight. If you want to connect with us, you can connect on Facebook at Intune to Nature anytime with your, suggestions or comments. They are most welcome. So I wish you a great evening. And coming up next, Alternative Perspectives. Stay with us.
If the earth could fly away, could you see her flying straight through space and time, leaving all humankind behind? If she could fly away, if she could fly away, so far away. If the earth could run away, could you see her gathering all the trees and plants, all the animals, all the birds and fowl, every creeping thing? They have never been her foe, never harmed her blessed soul. if she could ride all day. If she could ride all day, so far away, then she'd be running for life. Oh, she'd be running for life, running for a blessed life. Oh, she'd be running for life. Oh, she'd be running for life, running for a blessed life. If the earth could up and walk away, could you see her calling for all the oceans and the seas, all the rivers and the streams, all the whales and fish, every reptile that exists? They have never been her foe, never harmed her blessed soul. If she could walk away, if she could walk away so far away.